We're back within the moment on SDPB Radio. I'm Steve Zwemke in for Lori Walsh. Kevin Wooster joins us every Thursday at this time on In the Moment. His blog, On the Other Hand, can be found on SDPB's blog page at sdpb.org. Today we're going to visit about loss and finding ways to overcome loss. Kevin, welcome back to the program.
Hey, it's great to be back.
We're actually taking last week's conversation a little further, and Kevin, I'd just like to say that our staff was really touched by your new blog post, which went up yesterday, myself included, so just a really nice piece. I want to encourage our readers, or our listeners, to read Kevin's blog post, because there are some things in there that I think touch a lot of us, and there are things in there that I think a lot of us can really make use of in our lives. Kevin's blog starts, "Over the years, almost half a century of them by now, I have failed miserably in my attempts to write the story of my father's death." And Kevin, I'm going to let you take it from there.
Well, I, as I talk about in the story, you know, I was a kid that was struggling myself with a lot of things when my dad was diagnosed with advanced cancer, stomach and liver, at a time when there just wasn't all that much you could do there. And he decided, and I think rightly so, that he wasn't going to take on any of the treatment options at the time, which were, as I say in the column or in the blog piece, pretty much just torture that made him extend his life, but also magnified his misery. And so it was a fairly short summer from the time he was diagnosed with this up in Hennepin General Hospital in Minneapolis to the time he died in August 19, 1968, which was 49 years this August. And as I say in there, I've been trying to say goodbye to him for that long, and it's continuing, partly because I was 16. I was deranged. I was in a grief state that was hard for me to function very well, and I never saw him the last 2 weeks of his life in the hospital in Chamberlain. And so I think if you're somebody that has that loss at that age, and loss at any age, we have to deal with, you know, in that context, but manage not to say goodbye, you know, not to be any part of those last 2 weeks. I think I've certainly spent my life trying to, in some ways, trying to figure out what was going on with him by talking to my brothers and sisters, by talking to people that saw him then, and also just figuring out how I was going to move on from that. Not get over it. I'm still not over it. Mm-hmm. You know, you carry it, and combining a couple of things with that. With that metaphor, you know, Tim O'Brien is somebody that I interviewed with the book Things They Carry, who's going to be featured in the Vietnam experience out here in literature at the book festival and some other events. And I happened to talk to him on August 22nd, the day that we buried my dad. And we talked about his book, which was a military book, but also a life book about the things we carry. And, of course, we all carry those things. And this is a column about something that I've carried since I was 16 and something I still carry, and how you deal with it and what it means to you and in some ways how you learn and benefit from it.
It's hard not to be hit by that paragraph too, because when I sat down and read this last night, the very thing you said about being 16, distraught, and not even being able to muster up the courage to visit your father in the hospital during the last 2 weeks. I think that's the one thing, and that's why I say, Kevin, I really encourage people to read this, because when I look at that, it kind of makes you think about your own life and those that you love and those that are around you, and I think it's a great thing to think about. Your story kind of gives people an opportunity to have the chance that you didn't get over those last 2 weeks.
Yeah, I hope so. You know, and I was lucky enough to have a chance with my mom, who lived to be 86, and I was just over 50 then. And of course, that's a different grief experience and a more understandable loss, because she was 86, not mm-hmm. 56, and I was 52 or whatever it was, not 16. But it was still very painful in a different way. But I was there at the time she died, and I was with her as my siblings and my daughter and some of the other kids were at the time she passed. And in the days leading up to it in hospice, we got to speak words to her while she could still speak, and then be with her while she could squeeze our hands. And that was such a different goodbye, of course. Mm-hmm. And obviously, if I could go back somehow and you know, find a way to get into that room in the last couple of weeks of my dad's life, I would think I would do that, but I was 16, and I was scared, and I was lost, and, you know, so
yeah.
I did what I could at the time, and he never judged me for it. My mom would talk to me and say that, you know, you do what you want to. My older brother, Jim, who was kind of the leader of the family then, said, you know, basically, you've spent the summer with him dying. You've done your work. You go in the hills, you go out to the farm, you could be by yourself, do what you want to do, and so we deal with things the way we can at the time, and you know that wasn't the best way, but it's the way I dealt with it.
Yeah, and again, I think it's something that a lot of us can really relate to, and it's you know, again, like you said, part of being that age. But now, 49 years later, you found a way to help in coping with your loss, and it's an interesting way, fly fishing. Which is not that easy.
and I've written, as I say in there, I've written many poems, I've written many stories, columns, touched on the loss of my dad and what it meant to me and how it reshapes you. You know, I've talked to Christine Ohm about that because she lost her father at an early age and changed her life trajectory and changed the way she looked at the world, and it certainly did with me. And so you go through this whole long process trying to make sense of it, trying to come to terms with how you feel like you failed, and also to say goodbye. And I just never have been able to say it the way I really wanted to say it in all the writing I've done about it. And this year, as we came up on near the August 19th anniversary, I wanted to go to fly fish, and I wanted to do it near Silver City, because his dream, his retirement dream, was to have a little cabin at Silver City and to learn to fish, and to learn to fish the streams, to learn to fly fish even. Because he'd seen that, and we had tried fishing trout in manners that were really kind of hilarious with our old clunky Lyman County farm fishing stuff, and never were very successful. But that was something he held off, that someday, you know, he'd say, someday I'm going to have a place out there, and we're going to figure this out, and we're going to catch trout. I've been carrying that dream of his ever since I moved out here in 2002, and every time I fish, practically, I think about that. And sometimes I speak out loud to him, and that's kind of what was going on in this column, is us having what I consider to be a conversation.
It was something he never quite perfected, the fly fishing. Are you close to perfecting it and living out his dream?
I used to consider myself the worst fly fisherman in the Black Hills, and I'm better than that now. I'm still not as, you know, not on the level of the guys down at the fly shop who have helped me so much, but I'm pretty decent, and I usually catch fish when I go out, and I get tangled up and use foul language sometimes, for which I apologize to my dad, because he rarely swore, but I'm pretty good, and I like to think that when I have an experience on a stream, that it's kind of the stream experience that he might have had. And in some way, I'm sort of fulfilling that dream, or realizing that dream for him. And as I said, I have conversations out loud with him when I'm, and I certainly did when I went up there on the 19th, the 49th anniversary of his death, not far from Silver City in the stream. It's, and that's kind of what this is about.
It's not strange. I still do that with my dog that I used to walk all the time. Now, part of your blog, there's it's wonderful play-by-play of the battle between man versus fish, or actually Kevin versus trout. And it's really fun to read about getting out on the stream and catching some smaller ones, and eventually catching that dream trout.
Yeah, I lost the bigger one right away, you know, and that's when I cussed and had to apologize, and then we had a great little stretch of smaller brown trout, you know, wonderful fish, and I thought that's plenty, but there was this one pool left, and I mentioned in there that it was between me and the pickup, fishing upstream back to the pickup, and then I corrected myself and said us in the pickup, because you know, I've lost so much of my recollections of my dad over a half century almost, including, and it really troubles me, I really struggle to remember the tone of his voice, the sound of his voice. But I never don't remember the presence that he has, the essence of him that's with me all the time. And especially in those places, two places especially, church and these wild places, where I was lucky and blessed to be able to share time with him that he made in a busy schedule to hunt and fish and ice skate and to, you know, walk and talk on our land in Lyman County and other wild places. We were going together up to this last hole, as mm-hmm. far as I was concerned, mm-hmm. where you really couldn't have scripted it much better. I caught the big rainbow that I wanted on that day, and that was the end of the day, and then it started to rain. So by the time I got back to the pickup, it was getting pretty wet, but it worked out just perfectly.
You and your father still had this connection, though, of the nature, lakes, rivers, streams, hunting. I go to the end of your piece. It says, so I reach out to him there as well, meaning at the last hole that you fished where you caught the 18-inch rainbow. In another manner of prayer, trying to keep our intimate connection and searching for the words to finish the story I want and need to finish, this year I failed again, even with help of a fly rod. Did you really fail, or are you still looking for the things to write that will help you get there?
I have something left to say, and I'm not sure what it is. I feel good about the fly rod experience. I feel really good about what we did, you know. And at the end, I got to, and what it is, it also the process helped me fully realize what I did get. You know, because sometimes I think when you lose your dad at 16, all you can think about is what you lost. And oh, I'd love to be able to talk to him about the politics and mm-hmm. things when I was old enough and mature enough to have a perspective on it that I just didn't have at 12 or 13 or 14 or 15, how he would feel about some of these things, how he would have felt about some of those things. And I think sometimes you lose what you had. And what I had in that short period of time was really extraordinary. And I've talked to people who knew their parents longer, but perhaps didn't know them as well in some ways, and that's made me recognize the gift I did have, even though it was abbreviated and painful at its end.
Yeah, Kevin, I'm really happy to have been able to share this time with you this afternoon on In the Moment. Real quickly, we've got about 20 seconds. Maybe you can tease next week. You want to talk a little bit about grouse hunting?
Well, I'm thinking about going grouse hunting over across the Wyoming line tomorrow because I love hunting rough grouse to get warmed up, and I love hunting the aspens in the high country, and Wyoming season starts the 1st of September, earlier than ours. I rarely shoot a rough grouse, but I sure love hunting them. It's going to be 90, so I'll have to go early, and I think I'll probably have something to say about that.
Good luck. We'll look forward to it. Kevin, thank you so much.
Thanks.